Also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Father Matthew Fox. He's the author of A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. And can you give us an example of something that conveys this idea from your book?
Yes, this is a passage in Merton's writings. He says, he's talking about his living now in the very simple hermitage where he lived, which was very close to nature. He says, I live in the woods out of necessity. I get out of bed in the middle of the night because it is imperative that I hear the silence of the night alone and with my face on the floor say psalms alone in the silence of the night. The silence of the forest is my bride, and the sweet dark warmth of the whole world is my love. And out of the heart of that dark warmth comes a secret that is heard only in silence. But it is the root of all the secrets that are whispered by all the lovers in their beds all over the world. Such a beautiful passage that marries the cosmos and the psyche, you see. So the cosmic night is loving us. It is our bride. And it echoes the love between humans all over the world. It's just a marvelous passage that shows, among other things, he's completely gotten over the dualisms that he had between nature and grace and spirit and matter that he had inherited from Augustine. Mm-hmm. But also that important dualism that humans suffer from so much today, and that is the human psyche cut off from the cosmos. And he's remarrying cosmos and psyche, and that is so important for humans to find peace and become peacemakers.
So what would you say about the correlation between dualism and original sin? Mm. What would you have to say about that, and what have you learned from yourself and from your own journey and Merton's journey?
Well, as we talked about earlier, original sin is a very pessimistic and therefore patriarchal view of the world. The idea that a baby comes in the world already a sinner or damaged goods, this is not what mothers experience. It's not what indigenous people around the world experience. In fact, you know, the idea of original sin is very rare, except for Western Christianity. Eastern Christianity rejects it, and it's not found in Islam. It's not found in Buddhism. Quite the opposite. Buddhism talks about our original face, the Buddha nature that we all have. And the deeper tradition of Christianity is that every being, and certainly every human being, is an image of God, is a cosmic Christ, another Christ. So this path, this detour that Augustine took us on into dualism is pernicious. It creates self-doubt in an individual. It's bad sociology because in a culture, you wonder, well, maybe my original sin is that I'm black or that I'm gay or that I'm a woman in a patriarchal culture. So it has sociological implications that are very severe. And I think that's why the idea caught on at the time that Christianity started running an empire. Because you're going to run an empire, original sin's a good idea because it makes everyone doubt themselves, and therefore they get in line. And
so it's a way of controlling.
It's a way of controlling, absolutely. And one thing I found in my study here with Merton was that he was wrestling with this issue of original sin in the 60s. He himself was not happy with it, and he was going back and forth. And there's a wonderful poem he has about our human nature that I'd love to share if I can, because I think it gets to the heart of his resolution with the issue. Now, I, of course, came to the conclusion of original blessing in my book written in 1983, and I think it's solid psychologically, sociologically, and theologically, because the truth is that Jesus never heard of original sin. No Jews ever heard of original sin. So that path that Augustine took Christianity on is a detour. But here's a wonderful poem by Merton called First Lesson About Man. Can I share this?
Oh, please.
Man begins in zoology. I think that's his affirmation of evolution. He is the saddest animal. He drives a big red car called anxiety. Whenever he goes to the phone to call joy, he gets the wrong number. Therefore, he likes weapons. He knows all guns by their right names. He drives a big black Cadillac called Death. Now he is putting anxiety into space. He flies his worries all around Venus, but it does him no good. Man is the saddest animal. He begins in zoology and gets lost in his own bad news.
Does that completely applies today.
Doesn't
even more,
it?
Doesn't
exactly.
It? Yes, yes.
Exactly. And the quest for joy and the loss and all that. And his one of the big issues he took on in the 60s was technology.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah. All right, let's talk about what his view of technology, would Merton say?
Right. Well, of course, the big deal going in the 60s was getting to the moon. And they got to the moon a year after you died, 1969. But he, unlike the basic ethos of the time, he questioned the whole effort in a way. And this is what he had to say about it. And it really lays bare his thinking on technology. He says, even if we can fly, so what? They're flying ants. Even if humans fly all over the universe, we are still nothing but a flying ant until we recover a human center and a human spirit in the depth of our own being. What can we gain by sailing to the moon if we are not able to cross the abyss that separates us from ourselves? This is the most important of all voyages of discovery. Without it, all the rest are not only useless, but disastrous. Now, what if we had heeded his advice 55 years ago, you see, and we had put just a modest amount of the research, the money, the talent we put into getting to the moon and beyond into exploring this much more important issue, which is what makes human beings so violent? Why are we so tapped into powers of evil that we, you know, that we're still flying our worries around Venus and Mars and every place else, you see, as he says? We're afraid to undergo this deeper journey, he's saying. And I think he's right. And I think he challenges, frankly, today's Silicon Valley. Today, the issue isn't getting to the moon. But every year, we have a new gadget, new gee whiz gadgets coming out of Silicon Valley, don't we? And we know that Silicon Valley is doing very well. And they have lots of money. But notice, the man who murdered 50 people in Orlando was on Facebook while he was shooting his machine gun. And he was texting at the time, too. ISIS gets all the latest gadgets from Silicon Valley and applies it to their methodological work of evil. So clearly, technology is not going to save the human species. That's what Merton is saying. And it's Rabbi Heschel, who, by the way, was a friend of Merton's, too, said the same thing. He said, humanity will not be saved by more information, which is, of course, what computers give us, but by more appreciation, which is this soul work that Merton is calling for. So here's what I propose. I think Silicon Valley, given its vast success, should tax itself just a little bit on some of its massive profits. And with that tax, should put some research and support into groups of spiritual seekers all over the world who are trying to bring out the best that we know, the best methods we have, whether it's from Native American practices or Buddhist or Christian or Jewish or Hindu, to gather the forces of wisdom that can deal with this issue that Merton's talking about our propensity for violence and what we can do about it.
So for us to look deeply at this issue and why we as a species collectively are choosing this, what is influencing us, how deeply can we go to find this other, as you said earlier, that we are born with the face of God, so to speak, or the face of wisdom and love, or whatever you want to call it.
The Christ nature. Mm-hmm.
Universal intelligence, whatever that is. And then why we choose something other than that, why we back up from that.
Exactly. What are we so afraid of?
Yeah.
And that's what Merton's saying, that we go for the guns, we go for violence when we don't find the joy. Well, why don't we find the joy? You know, what's holding us back? And this is a cultural thing, not just an individual thing. For example, Merton critiques, he critiques religion very strongly, but he also critiques the media. He says that we are inundated with a glittering Niagara of trivia from the media.
I loved it.
Niagara of trivia.
I loved it. The Niagara of noise from the
exactly
the media
and trivia.
And I know, like here we're sitting down in 2016, the late summer of 2016. What I notice is that if you follow the news, let's say the political news, every day there's some little nuance that they're reporting on, and they just expand it and blow it up into this big thing. And then the next day, it's something else, and it keeps you in a tither.
Exactly.
And it's kind of like Dr. Andy Weil would say, we might need to take a little bit of a media break, you know.
And pull the plug
and take some time and not just tune in every single little nuance they would have
us
do.
Here's what Merton says, because he analyzes. He says the effect of this mentality is found in the mass media, the results in giving the public what it wants in order to get the public's money. And he says, you know, we're not looking for what matters. We're looking for what will pay off, what will increase our profits.
What will increase our profits?
He's a great critic of the the capitalist system as it's being played out.
And I loved what you said earlier about you described Merton getting up in the middle of the night or the early morning in that quiet of morning, and how that part of him that was a hermit that did know the importance of being alone in the silence.
Yes, indeed. Yes. His solitude, of course, was very important to him. As it should be to everybody, because that's how we calm the reptilian brain, by tuning in to our capacity for silence and stillness. And he did that as a monk, but he did it, I think, even more as a hermit. And it's an invitation for all of us. That's how the contemplative side of our psyches is developed, by honoring the silence. And of course, that's what meditation is in any tradition.
Right.
And
yet, on the other side of that coin, married to that is compassion in action. So it's not just okay, recede from the world altogether, but it's like bringing the gifts of that then into some action, as he did. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Father Matthew Fox. He's the author of The Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. And if you want to know more about the work of Father Fox, you can go to his website, matthewfox.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Father Matthew Fox. He's the author of many, many books, and the latest one is A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. And Matthew, the way that you describe his journey, and I would say even your journey, I think the quote is something, it's a complete circle, but it is not a closed circle. It is represented by a spiral. And that really, I love the image of that, that we do come back around, but not quite the same. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think there's something very Celtic about that too. You know, the entrance to Newgrange, this ancient monument in Ireland, there are three circles, or three, really, they're spirals. Mm-hmm. And the great entrance that was built, you know, it's older than the pyramids, this place. And of course, DNA, our DNA is spiral, and the galaxies are spiral. So spiral is a very important energy, a model for the universe, the macrocosm and the microcosm. So why wouldn't our journeys also be spiral in some way? And I think the four paths that I talk about are very spiral. They're not closed. After the fourth path, the via transformativa, you go back to the via positiva again, because that's what justice and compassion are meant to do. It's meant to bring more people to the table of the banquet of the joy and the beauty and the awe of life, you see. So none of it is a closed circle. I think that all of life is an open circle.
That takes me to another subject. And you're bringing up Newgrange reminds me of a moment. Michael and I were able to visit Newgrange. And have you been there?
Yes.
Okay, so you know that the entrance is kind of narrow when you walk in, and there's this long kind of passageway. And when we got there, I realized that Michael, being as big as he was, probably would not fit through this narrow passage. And so I walked through with a very small group of people and ended up in this chamber. Mm-hmm. And I turned around, and there was Michael.
He made it, huh?
And I said, "Michael, how did you do it?" And Michael said, "I crawled on my hands and knees, bowed down to the mother."
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, wow, what an initiation he had, that he really,
that's,
he came in, bowed low to
that's
the mother.
That's story. The part of the story that I like, of that story that I like, is that you charged ahead and didn't even look back. I think that's good, too. It says something about your personality. But you know, as you know, that amazing monument is so set up, so that only one day of the year, December 21st, the sun shines through the entire shaft. That happens to be my birthday, too, the winter solstice.
And,
so
and
I'm
then,
especially partial to that.
So then the chamber is impregnated with the light, you know,
exactly,
in that way. And that just reminds me of one of the things that you say of Merton, and I know of you, and this happened, and also that the church said it was heretical on your part, was that you call God Mother, you know, the Mother, the Godhead is Mother.
Well, all the creation mystics call God Mother. Hildegard of Bingen, Meister Eckhart, surely, and of course, Julian of Norwich developed that fuller than any other theologian in the West. But Merton, too, called God Mother. He wrote a beautiful long poem called Hagia Sophia, Holy Wisdom. And he has many teachings about the feminine side of God, just as I had. And so the critique from the Vatican at the time against my work was simply ignorance. They didn't realize that the motherhood of God has often been celebrated in the West by the great mystics. And even Isaiah 42 talks about God as mother. So even the Bible has some of that in it, not nearly enough. But it's important, because if we carry only a male version of divinity and teach our children this, whether they be boys or girls, this is setting us up for a patriarchal culture. And we need a healthy culture, would have a healthy balance of masculine and feminine images and energies. And you can see it, for example, I think, in our school system and in other systems, certainly in the political system, the economic system, it's excessively patriarchal. And it's missing the dimensions of compassion and caring and creativity that are integral to the feminine value system.
Exactly. You know, one of the other heresies that you were accused of when you were dismissed from the Dominican Order was that you were, it was said that you were taking the four pathway instead of the traditional three pathway. And this was very offensive to the quote-unquote church and was heretical. So can you say something about that?
Well, those three paths are purgation, illumination, union. And what I noticed very early in my thinking about these things is it leaves out joy, it leaves out creativity, leaves out justice. So there's a lot missing in those paths. And then I researched it more, and they don't come from the Bible at all. They came from a second and third century philosopher, Proclus and Plotinus, two philosophers, and neither of them were Christian or Jewish. They didn't know even the Bible. So why is it, once again, it's just like original sin idea too. It's not in the Bible. So why is it the church has built this edifice on these important concepts that are not Jewish-based or biblically-based that Jesus never heard of? It, again, I think it serves political interests. But it's not good spirituality, it's not good theology, and we have to consciously throw them out. And in my doing so, I've had a lot of response from Jewish thinkers, for example, who have appreciated what I've done and understood what I've done by stepping away from that choking system that is contrary to Jewish thinking, that leaves out justice, leaves out joy. These are creativity.
So, Matthew, where are you these days? What is exciting your soul? What is stimulating your own personal creativity?
Well, a number of things. One thing, they're starting up a new school again based on my University of Creation Spirituality. And by they, I mean the younger generation and many of our graduates. They're calling it, of all things, an institute of the Matthew Fox Institute of Creation Spirituality. But they'll be offering master's degrees in Creation Spirituality and also a doctor of ministry and work in spirituality, and a new degree, a DSP, a doctor of spirituality in spirituality. So I'm excited about that, and I think it'll be up and running by January. And I'm kind of behind the scenes. As I say, I'm kind of an elder. I'll teach a bit in it, but again, I'm excited. It's a new generation that's enthused about this.
I'm just thinking of your time in Paris when you were with Pierre Chenu. That in Paris there was quite a lot going on, a revolution in Paris at that time in those years, which would be in the early 67 to 70.
I was
all right,
there.
And that he encouraged you all as students to get out in the streets, go out there and mix with the young people. And he was not afraid of the
not
young people.
He was 75 years old. He said, go out and join the revolution, he said. Don't come back next class. Come back in 2 weeks and tell me what you've contributed to the revolution, he said. And he was a marvelous soul, very alive, very youthful, and courageous, but with a wonderful sense of humor, too. He was very special, yeah.
So, and with you and all the work that you do with young people in your Cosmic Mass, which are just these wonderful gatherings that involve, you please describe what it
well,
is.
Well, we really have brought rave into the Western liturgy. So the essence of them is dance as prayer and worship together. And, we've done over 100 of them in various places in North America. And we have a new generation trained in their young 30s who are doing it. And we're excited. We think it's kind of time to take it more nationally and even internationally.
And this would go along with what Merton thought about the liturgy. He really felt like the liturgy of the church was quite dead.
That's very true. He was moved very much by an African mass that he heard on tape. And he referred to that frequently, that this sounds much more real than what we're doing. He also criticized the priesthood as it was being practiced and as they were training people for it. He said, we have to reinvent the priesthood, he said. So definitely, I've been doing this kind of thing in my work, certainly for the last 20, 25 years. One reason I became Episcopalian was that the freedom was there to reinvent worship. And what we're doing is bringing in postmodern language like DJs, VJs, rappers, and inviting these young people to participate and really lead in sacred ceremony. And I think there's a profound need for that. I mean, consider Burning Man, which is happening this week. 70,000 people go out to the desert in August to do what? To have ritual. And our modern culture underestimates the power of ritual. But it's not about reading and being read to and being preached at. It's something much more bodily than that. So I think it's timely that and in our cosmic masses, they're very ecumenical. We've had Buddhists and Muslims and Sufis and Jewish people and rabbis, as well as Christians of all sorts, participate and take delight in this prayer experience.
Well, may it continue to grow. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Justine. It's always a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Father Matthew Fox, the author of A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. And if you'd like to know more about his work, you can go to his website, matthewfox.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3593.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Dr. Neil Thies, author of Notes on Complexity. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about human existence in a conscious and alive universe.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers established the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.